5 minutes left. I'll flip it.
Okay, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Great to see the crowd out this early on a Monday morning. I should acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Kimberly Schneider, is a postdoc working with me at Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada in Guelph. And I will admit going in that I suffer from terminal optimism. I had hoped to have a lot more data to present today than I do. And I'm sure every scientist in the audience can relate completely. That being said, I'll share what I have and hopefully generate some discussion. And I thought it's worth talking just to set the context a little bit about why farmers install tile drains. Because I know if you read some of the news reports, people will say, "Oh my God, tile drains! They're destroying the environment. They're." I have actually heard environmental scientists refer to tile drains as agricultural sewers. Yeah. So there are very good reasons why farmers install tile drains. And it isn't always as extreme as that poor farmer who had his John Deere stuck in the mud hole. But, we are dealing through a large part of the temperate agricultural zones with not a problem of lack of moisture, but poorly distributed moisture. We always have too much in the spring and not enough in the midsummer. So we're wanting to get rid of excess moisture in the spring so we can get out there and get planting, which means a longer effective growing season. We can start earlier in the spring. We have more growing days at the end of the season or better opportunity for harvest at the end of the season. Less surface runoff and erosion. The discussion is now we focused on what's coming out of the tiles and forget that it's what's important is the net of what's come off of that field with tiles compared to without tiles. And the reality is the areas that need tile drains have tile drains. We haven't got those comparisons very often where you haven't got a tile drain to say what was coming off the field before tile drains were happening or before they were installed, which is probably quite a bit more than what's coming off now. But it was coming off overland instead of through the tile drains. Less compaction, increased available moisture. This is the part that really freaks people out who don't understand tile drains is you've got a deeper rooting zone, so you've actually got more water available from the field with tile drains than without, and ultimately higher crop yields, which is why farmers do it, why they're investing the money. And if you look at the lower Great Lakes Basin, it's probably among the most intensively tile-drained areas in the world. Certainly, you might look at some of the areas in Scandinavia, but we've got a long history of tile drainage, and there's a lot of them there. So we have to manage with them in the system because they're not going to go away. What does it mean environmentally? Well, with tile drains, you're going to change the patterns of total volume of flow, but not necessarily change the total flow coming off of a given field. So the net effect isn't completely clear. It's going to depend on the size of the storm and how wet it was beforehand, but you'll likely see subtle changes in the pattern of when water comes off the field. We do certainly see greater connectivity. We've taken areas of the landscape that probably were not generating surface flow that was getting to surface water reliably, and there's suddenly a connection from those areas directly to surface water. This might mean increased movement of nitrate to surface water rather than groundwater. This could be relevant to some of what Mark and Lowell have been looking at. We actually get skimming of nitrate from the shallow groundwater into the tile drains. And you get potential for increased phosphorus movement. And this is where I've been focusing most of my work, is what's happening with the phosphorus movement off of the landscape. We are going to get greater evapotranspiration because of more crop growth. Again, changing that moisture balance a little bit. And then, in most cases, probably an influence on denitrification. Less denitrification because you've got less saturated conditions, but some conditions that may mean more incomplete denitrification, more N2O. We always deal in balances. Nothing is ever black and white. We're very shades of green, but we get in trouble if we start talking about anything in terms of just it being all positive or all negative. So I want to address the myth first that water through tile drains is equivalent to nutrient export, because that's one of the assumptions I see. And I think What's important to understand is water entering tile drains follows two very different pathways. We've got the matrix flow into tile drains. This is the part that's modeled by drain mod, the assumption that water percolates down through the soil matrix and moves laterally to the tile drains. Lots of interaction with the soil, relatively slow. And as I said, that's what drain mod models. The other pathway is what's variously called macropore flow, preferential flow, bypass flow. This is the cracks, the earthworm burrows, the root channels, where you've got a large conduit directly from the surface to the tile drain. So it's very rapid. There's very little interaction with the soil. It's essentially diverted surface runoff. I do make the point there. For tile drainage, it's only the macropores connected directly to the tile drains that count. Because if you're 10 feet away from a tile, you get macropore flow down into, you know, deeper into the soil profile, and then it percolates through the matrix to the tile. You still have lots of interaction with the soil before it gets to the tile drains. So really, when we talk about macropore flow to tile drains, it's a relatively narrow zone directly over the tile. So it's not, tile drains are not connecting the entire landscape to surface water. They're connecting the zones directly over the tiles. And this is just a picture to show that. The matrix flow coming from the entire width of the area between the tiles and relatively slow, that preferential flow to the tile being what's going straight down too. My worldview, which is backed up by some pretty compelling evidence, is that phosphorus movement to tile drains is dominated by preferential flow, at least in the lower Great Lakes Basin. There are areas in North America where soils are saturated, subsoils are saturated with phosphorus, that we actually get matrix movement of tile of phosphorus that can get to shallow groundwater or to tiles. If you look at the recently glaciated soils of the lower Great Lakes Basin, there is enough capacity to absorb phosphorus that even if the topsoil layers are saturated, if it moves down into the subsoil, it gets bound very quickly, and any sediments get filtered out very quickly. So it's only that bypass flow that's actually carrying phosphorus to tile drains. And the amount of bypass flow is going to vary greatly depending on soil texture. So if you look at what's going to come to the tile through matrix flow, that's going to be the soluble and non-reactive nutrients. So if we're looking at nitrate going to tile drains, that's the matrix portion. If you get bypass flow from the surface, unless you've got nitrate sitting on the surface, how often is that going to happen? You're not going to get a lot of nitrate. And that would be why when you get those big rain events in June, you get dilution because you've gotten a lot of bypass flow into the tile. Chloride would get to the tile that way. Perhaps urea might be getting to the tile drains that way. Macropore flow is going to be carrying the reactive nutrients like phosphorus. It may be carrying some of the reactive or highly sorbed pesticides. And some of the sediment. So you're going to get different contaminants in the tile drains depending how the water is getting to the tile drains. So the study we looked at, we piggybacked on some studies set up by Dr. McRae from University of Waterloo and Dr. O'Halloran from University of Guelph out on field sites, and installed conductivity meters. Looking at conductivity as a proxy for how much of the flow in that tile is from through matrix or through macropores. The idea being the matrix flow, it's picked up a lot of ions from the soil solution, is going to be fairly high conductivity. If you're at a low flow situation, that's going to represent basically what the conductivity of the matrix flow was. And then if you get bypass flow or a preferential flow, that diverted flow rainwater is going to be low conductivity. We will see a drop in conductivity proportional to the amount that's coming through the macropores. So using an N-member mixing model, we can estimate proportions at a very fine time scale how much macropore flow is happening. And then we calculated the volumes of total and macropore flow from those tiles. So this particular example, and we split these out for individual rain events to try and illustrate what's happening. This is a site in Essex, Essex County, a Brookston clay loam soil, highly susceptible to cracking, lots of earthworms, so very high proportion of macropore flow. Let me get my... Okay. The yellow line is the conductivity. So prior to the rain event, conductivity was very high. And immediately when it rained, in this soil, it just drops like a stone and stays fairly low and then starts to come back up. So we're using that to calculate the proportion of macropore flow. So the blue line is the total flow out of the tile. Let's see, it had been at zero and increased very rapidly. And here is the proportion of macropore flow. So a lot of macropore flow early on, and then it actually declines as the matrix flow starts to come in. Again, clay loam soil, flow through the soil matrix is quite slow. So it takes some time for this to happen. This was in June. This was a summer event. Lots of opportunity for cracking. So in this case, about 85% of the total flow for that event to the tile was through macropores. Yep, extremely high. This is later in the month. Again, a much smaller rain event, and had been, the soil was fairly wet. The first one, the soil was dry to start with. This was, the soil was wet, so some of those cracks had swollen shut. A much smaller impact on the conductivity, much smaller part of the macropores, only about 35% was macropore flow. So the amount that's going to happen is going to vary with rain events, even on a soil that's highly susceptible to macropores. So that's the situation in summer. This is looking at an event in February where it's a winter event. We've got, rather than having rainfall, and I haven't shown the conductivity in here, it followed the same patterns. That's how we calculated the macropores. But rather than looking at the temperature, here's the 0 degrees Celsius with the freezing mark. We did have a rain event, so rain on snow event here. Temperature stayed fairly high, but then it dropped below freezing. So we had flow from the rain on snow event, and then it stopped, and then we had a thaw. Temperature went up. 15 degrees Celsius in February is not usual for Ontario, even for Essex County. Pretty significant thaw, so the snow that was there melted fairly rapidly. So we had flow, and you can pick up the diurnal pattern as you had thawing during the day, freezing at night, or even sunshine on the surface causing surface thawing, triggering some flow in the tile. And you can see we did have macropore flow happening, but it was a much smaller proportion. When you get that thaw event instead of that rapid event, it seemed to be a lower proportion of macropore flow. And this is on a winter thaw event on a loam site, much lower proportion, about 20% macropore flow, 80% matrix flow. But again, seems to be lower in the winter than in the summer. So what I'm seeing so far, macropores are still active during the winter thaws and rain on snow events. It doesn't shut down completely, but there appears to be less macropore flow during those thaw events. So we're going to see greatest macropore flow during the summer heavy rain events and less during the spring thaw or winter thaw events. But the differences in macropore proportion are greater between soil types than between seasons. The soil texture seems to be what dominates. And still have lots of work to do, need to gather more data and also put it together with what's happening with the phosphorus losses to be able to nail down exactly how that's influencing phosphorus losses through tile drains. I should acknowledge the people who've helped with this, Dr. Maren McRae and Dr. Ivan O'Halloran, for providing access to the sites. The co-op students that I left going through massive Excel data sheets trying to analyze the data, and that funding was provided by the APACE program for Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. Thank you very much.
We have time for questions. Dan?
So are these sites tilled, non-no-till, what?
They were dominated by no-till, but there was always some tillage, usually prior to planting corn. And I'd have to go back and check exactly which sites had been tilled. I know the loam site had been. What I've seen from other sites is the impact of tillage shows up in the macropore proportion immediately after tillage. And then by, you know, if they till in the spring, it shows up in the spring. By the time you get to fall, that's disappeared. So it does have an impact, but it doesn't last year round.
And what did your tile do?
Tiles are between 75 centimeters and a meter. Yeah, we're not as deep as in Iowa.
Okay, we're going to have to hold off there. Sorry, thank you
okay.
very much.
Thank you.